After she'd rinsed off the foam, vents along the base of the walls blasted her with heated air, frying her to the point of itchiness in a matter of seconds. As she raked her static-charged auburn hair back behind her ears, an electronic lock snicked, and the exit door popped outward a foot.
Please proceed to level 3 containment.
Right.
Greta immediately moved into the well-lit, polished metal hallway, which was also windowless. She could have touched the ceiling with a raised hand, and the corridor was so narrow it wouldn't permit the full spread of her arms. The air hung heavy with a mist of disinfectant that stung the back of her throat. Auto-tracking vidcams mounted at intervals along the ceiling followed her barefoot progress to the next chamber, which was even smaller. The bioengineering facility's hazard containment system consisted of a graduated series of hermetically sealed metal enclosures, working like nested boxes. The more dangerous the biological materials, the smaller the enclosure in which they were stored. Level 1's barrier, which took up an entire subfloor of the Omnico skyscraper, encompassed containment levels 2 through 4. Level 2, which was contained within Level 1, encompassed levels 3 and 4, with Level 3 containing Level 4. Each of the interiors was reverse pressurized so that if a seal failure occurred, external air would rush in, keeping contaminants from escaping to the next level. When she entered the tiny room, the airtight door closed behind her. Sheets of tempered glass covered the walls, ceiling, and floor. Behind the glass were banks of 5-foot-long light tubes. Yet another automated surveillance camera stood watch over her.
Please put on the goggles hanging on the hook in front of you.
Greta donned the red lensed eye protectors. The surrounding lights all came on at once. The intense ultraviolet bombardment lasted 15 minutes, during which she was directed by the voice to assume various awkward positions that allowed the germ-killing radiation to reach otherwise hidden surfaces.
Please don your plastifoil slippers and proceed to level 4.
The straight steel corridor leading to level 4 had a narrow bunker-slit window along one wall. Through the three layers of thick glass, Greta could see dozens of biotech workers in lemon-yellow hazard suits with oxygen canisters strapped to their backs. Because of the glare of the overhead lights off the hood's visor plates, she couldn't see the workers' faces. And they seemed too preoccupied with their cluttered lab tables and banks of electronic machinery to notice her passing. The corridor ended in a circular bulkhead door, which stood slightly ajar. The brightly lit level 4 operating suite was the tiniest of the nested defensive boxes, the most deadly and contagious microbial environment on the planet. The hollow steel cylinder was so narrow that the single bed it contained nearly spanned its diameter. On the walls opposite the sides and head of the bed were rows of triple-laminated glass portholes. Directly below the ob ports, from similar heavily gasketed circular openings, rubberized, liver-colored gauntlets hung down in pairs. Shelves packed with medical supplies and equipment ringed all but the foot of the bed. The enclosure was claustrophobically cramped.
Your anxiety is only natural, but it is best to continue without delay. Please climb onto the bed, and we will make you more comfortable as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Greta forced herself to crawl forward. The door automatically shut and sealed behind her. As she lay back on the bed, she saw movement through all of the portholes. Technicians in biohazard suits took up positions along the outside of the cylinder and proceeded to thrust their arms into the gauntlets, which allowed them to reach over the bed, more than halfway across her body. All those moving arms made the chamber seem even smaller. And no matter how hard she tried, she couldn't seem to fill more than the top third of her lungs. To try to calm herself, the CEO focused on her own reflection in the curve of the ceiling. She strained to make out the details of her face, but the brushed metal turned her features into an unrecognizable blur, as if who and what she'd been for 26 years had already been erased. Meanwhile, the pairs of gauntleted hands worked with practiced precision, strapping her down at the chest, waist, and knees. Once she was tightly secured to the mattress, the anonymous fingers crawled over her, jabbing the needles for intravenous lines into her arms and inserting a catheter into her bladder. They applied a liquid adhesive to her skin and attached life sign sensors and neuromuscular stimulators. Finally, gloved hands at the head of the chamber slipped an oxygen mask over her nose and mouth. Greta gulped at the hiss of oxygen, which was mixed with a quick-acting sedative gas. It also carried a massive dose of bioengineered virus. After that first deep breath, There was no question of going back. She gladly surrendered to the calm that settled over her.
You are a very brave girl.
Greta felt hot blood rush to her face and neck. She recognized her father's voice. It hadn't come through the operating suite's intercom speaker. It didn't exist anywhere outside her mind. Regis Otis Trask, the former CEO of Omnico, had been dead for 4 years. Whenever her father had said those words to her, and he'd had the opportunity to say them often, what he'd meant was that she was very brave for a girl. Brave considering that because of her sex, she possessed relatively limited physical and mental strength and endurance.
Bastard.
The woman's personal abilities and achievements had very little to do with the power she currently wielded over the lives of tens of billions of human beings. She'd inherited her father's position at the top of the conglomerate's executive hierarchy, and she had an army of highly capable, highly motivated defenders dedicated to keeping her there. For as long as she could remember, everyone she encountered had looked past her, or through her, and had seen only her father's awesome legacy. But Dreda was very much Regis Otis Trask's daughter. She shared his thirst for conquest and empire, and the need to burn her name deep into the pages of history, desire she could never satisfy as caretaker of a bureaucratic monolith on a dying planet. For months, preparations had been underway for her unannounced permanent departure to Shadow World. In secret, Omnico's top scientists had duplicated the totality concept's reality-jumping techno, and had managed to vastly improve upon it. The transfer of soldiers and materiel only awaited the successful completion of her Level 4 treatment, which for security reasons had been postponed until the last possible moment. Dreda had committed herself to the irreversible genetic procedure shortly after the CEO's joint interrogation of the Shadow World prisoner. The man called Ryan Cotter had described his Earth as a place of chaos, of perpetual bloody turmoil. Social control did exist, but only in confined areas called baronies, and it was maintained by brute power. Male power. To cross over to Shadow World unprepared for that would have meant the surrender of everything Dreda had, of everything she'd ever dreamed of. Could Alexander the Great have succeeded if he'd been a woman? Could Cortez, Napoleon, Hannibal? Her own Earth's history said no. In times of internal strife, during periods of conquest, males only respected other males, only feared other males. If Dreda failed to instill absolute terror in her adversaries on the parallel Earth, she knew her relatively small expeditionary force could not prevail. And she not only had Shadow World males to contend with, but those in her own support units as well. In a different reality, the old urges of one sex to dominate the other would surely resurface. The selective subordination and subjugation of females was bound to follow. Such an outcome was unacceptable to Dreda Otis Trask.
Chains are meant for other people.
Oh, fuck off, Dad.
Dreda became aware of a ringing in her ears, the first sign of the spread of the genetically modified virus. Almost immediately, her body temperature rose, and as it climbed, the sedation was increased. Long before the infection's peak, she slipped quietly into a drug-induced coma. She didn't feel the plastic tube slide down her airway, or hear the rhythmic hiss of the respirator begin. The tailored virus carried a limited set of genetic instructions, which as it replicated, was transmitted to all her cells. These instructions permanently altered her body's chemistry, reinitiating long-dormant physical processes, reactivating the growth plates in the bones of her hips, legs, back, shoulders, and arms. Under their new instructions, the targeted cells began rapid, controlled division. As her bones enlarged, cell layer by cell layer, they ached as if they'd been shattered by sledgehammers. As they enlarged, the attached sinews, muscles, and cartilage stretched to the splitting point. Nerve cells began multiplying in specific locations as well, which only magnified the intensity of the skeletal pain. The transformation process was so agonizing that it required anesthetic narcosis. Early test subjects who were fully conscious had died from the pain within a matter of hours. Safe in a deep coma, the CEO felt nothing. She drifted in darkness while her body metamorphosed in its stainless steel cocoon. Inside and outside the chamber, the atmosphere was anything but tranquil. Biotech teams in three shifts saw to her considerable life support needs around the clock. Her normal daily calorie intake was quadrupled, and she received constant electrical stimulation of new nerves.